Sportsnet today. Listen on the air, online, on the Sportsnet app, and always on your smart speaker. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Hello, welcome to Sportsnet today. I'm Riley Pollock, riding solo today for the first hour at least. Logan Gordon will join me for the second hour before he helps out Pat Steinberg as the co-host for the big show. A busy show today. Lots of hockey talk as the NHL regular season kicked off yesterday. We finally have Canadian teams in the mix tonight. The Kraken had their first game as a franchise, and we're still waiting for the Flames game on Saturday. Let's get to all that and news from Flames practice as we talk to Peter Labardius.
Flames Insider, Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Hello, Lou. How are we doing today?
I'm good, Riles. I am excellent. Thank you kindly.
That's good. It was a fun night last night to start the NHL season, wasn't it?
It was. I would say that both games were very different. You know, and this can happen, Tampa Bay with the big ceremony and everything that went hand in hand for the Lightning going into their game with Pittsburgh, and they were just flat. They never really got to their game the majority of the night. And give Pittsburgh a lot of credit. They understand they're without, you know, their two best centers right now, and Crosby and Malkin, although in Sidney's case, he is traveling with the team and hopes to join them sooner rather than later. But, you know, the term now used in hockey isn't about defending. It's about checking and using your speed to check. And, you know, that's an incredibly difficult group to check when you talk about the Lightning. But they didn't have it. And I thought Pittsburgh did a fantastic job of checking and pressuring and forechecking. You know, they were completely deserving of that win. So, you know, good on Mike Sullivan's squad for answering the bell and kind of ruining the Tampa Bay party. But the Lightning, frankly, Riles, looked like a team that knew the other group wasn't at full strength, maybe took it for granted a little bit, and those things can happen with all the pomp and circumstance and emotion that went into the game prior to the puck being dropped.
And a great story from that Pittsburgh team as well, as Brian Boyle, after not playing last year, comes back with a PTO with the Pittsburgh Penguins and scores in his first game of the regular season.
You know, Brian is just one of the classiest people. He's been through a lot in his life, including, you know, a battle with cancer, did not play last season in the NHL. He suited up in Latvia for his country at the World Championship, played very well there, and was a great mentor and leader on that United States group that showed very, very well in that tournament before losing to Canada in a semifinal game. So everybody loves the guy. His story is well worth noting, and it was terrific to see him convert on that particular goal as part of Pittsburgh's 6-2 win last night at the hands of the Lightning. And by the way, just going to throw this out at you, that was the same Dominic Simone, right, that we saw last year?
I'm pretty sure it was the same guy.
He's a good player last night. And not just because he scored, which he didn't do all of last season, and, you know, what for him had to be the most miserable time of his professional and probably life, you know, being out of the lineup for the majority of the season, didn't really get in under Daryl Sutter until the very end. But, you know, give him credit. It worked pretty well for him in Pittsburgh the first go-around, and I thought he was a good performer last night for the Penguins. That line, you know, that he was a part of, they were a real catalyst, I thought, throughout the course of the night.
And we another fun game, the second one, as Seattle played their first ever of the franchise's history against the Golden Knights. Looked like it might be a bit of a runaway early, as the Golden Knights potted a couple quick ones after Seattle had all the momentum for the first couple minutes. But they sure made it a game. And welcome to the league, Seattle. A controversial goal causes you to lose the game.
Well, it was controversial. The Chandler Stephenson goal that they reviewed, and you know, a lot of people at first glance thought that it was kicked in. And I can certainly understand why many people would feel that way. First of all, do you think Vegas knows how to put on a show?
Oh, that was amazing, that opening ceremony.
You know, I think Montreal does it as well, if not better than anybody, but, you know, there's a new sheriff potentially in town. That was extravagant and so well done. I really enjoyed the game. It had good tempo. You know, Seattle, to their credit, bounces back from 3-0 down to tie it on Morgan Geekie's goal. And I have a feeling that Geekie is going to have a bit of a breakout year there, part of the second power play. Really liked what I saw from him, the former Tri-City American star, in a couple of preseason games. It was a great deal of fun, controversial ending. Let me ask you this. For me, you know, the Western Hockey League has an interesting rule where, you know, you can't necessarily completely kick it in, but, you know, if your blade is on the ice and it goes in, or even if you direct it in with your skate, it counts. And I'm starting to feel more and more like, you know, if the puck in any way, shape, or form makes contact with the skate, but the blade remains on the ice, I would probably look at going more along those lines, because, you know, the more you can eliminate gray, the better. Now, you know, the whole kicking scenario gets tricky because, you know, you don't want goalies in particular to get hurt. And in fact, the young man in the Ontario Hockey League, Tucker Tynan, who is back and playing really, really well this year to start the season, you know, he was seriously injured in a kicking scenario like that a couple seasons ago. But yeah, you know, it's controversial and an exciting night and good performances. I don't think, you know, we feel much different about Vegas, but you brought up a good point too, Riles. Shots on goal early were 8-3 Seattle, and it was 2-0 Vegas.
Yeah, it was certainly interesting, and I just thought it was an all-around good hockey game, and I kind of feel like Seattle could be a playoff team in the Pacific with that roster makeup. I'm a little more bullish on them than maybe I was right after the expansion draft.
Well, it's one night, and I think what people need to be reminded of is, yes, it's easy in hindsight to think about Vegas and what an incredible season they had and what an incredible story they had. But going into year number one, there were all of these same questions. In fact, I would make an argument, at least on the defensive side of the ledger, that, you know, Seattle's defense is in much better shape than Vegas's was in year one, you know, entering the first season. And did anybody think William Karlsson was going to go off for 45 after he'd scored 9 the season before? So, you know, it's easy to go look at Vegas's roster. Well, yeah, go back. Go back and remind yourselves what you really thought after their draft. Now, in saying that, is Seattle going to do what Vegas did? No way. That's a once-in-a-lifetime expansion professional sports season. I, from day one of the expansion draft, I think this is going to be a competitive team that's not going to be an easy out. And I bet, you know, we haven't seen it yet. We're going to have to wait a little while to see it. But my guess is Seattle's new home environment isn't going to hurt that group.
Yeah, I'm very excited when they finally get there after their, I believe it is a 5-game road trip to start the season. It's going to be fun there on opening night for the Kraken. looking at the Flames here as they were on the ice for practice not too long ago, couple notes. Michael Backlund did not practice today. That is just a maintenance day, Lou?
Yeah, that's the team has called it maintenance. I'm up here in the stands chatting with you while availability is going on underneath in the media lounge. So if there's anything further to report, I'm sure we will have that on our radio station sooner rather than later. But that is what the team sent out. Of course, Blake Coleman did take part in practice today, but he is not available. And with Richardson on IR and Pitlick skating, but not yet with the team, you know, the team practiced today with 10 forwards. So it's going to be interesting, Riles, to see how things play out by the end of the week. Oliver Shillington was in a green jersey today as, you know, being used in drills, rushes, and everything else as a forward. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that that's going to be the case come Saturday, but, you know, by my math, unless Pitlick is ready to go, they might require another forward. But also remember this, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is the case. This team has a plethora of defensemen. And would I be shocked, depending on Pitlick's status, because, you know, we're not worried about Michael Backlund, if the Flames go into game number one with an 11-7 formation, forwards to defense? It would not surprise me in the least, depending on, you know, if there's any way, shape, or form that Pitlick can get back in and practice and be ready. And, you know, today is already Wednesday's practice is concluded. So I'm leaning no, but one never knows either.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought maybe Shillington playing up with the forwards today was any indication that you thought maybe Valimaki had the inside edge to make the top six for opening night. But clearly you've answered that and said maybe we might see seven defensemen on opening night. So,
well, we might. Yeah. We might. It wouldn't shock me. But, you know, I would suggest that, you know, Yusso, who's been on a pairing the last couple of days with Eric and Branson, you know, that is certainly something to be noted. I thought Yusso, as I've shared, struggled early in the preseason and got better and better and better, I felt, as it went along. Now, and it happened again today right in front of me. You know, the fabulous skating coach of the Flames, Danielle Fujita, has done terrific work with Yusso, and it's work that literally was continuing no less than 3 or 4 minutes ago, is that's an area that Yusso continues to work at and get stronger. And a lot of crossover work today as part of the drills that he was going through. So I would suggest that don't read a ton today, but I think there's something to be read into that. And I'm very hopeful that Yusso, like so many others, gets off to a great start because, A, I just like the individual so much, and B, you know, if his ability to check continues to improve and his confidence in that area, Riles, continues to improve, I flat out know that, you know, he is more than capable of seeing the game and has an ability to make plays with the puck on his stick. But one thing needs, you know, to continue to grow, and he's 22 years old. So we'll see how that scenario on the back end continues to play out. And every single indication points to Tanev Zadorov and Hanifin and Anderson for opening night in Edmonton.
Yes, it certainly does. Looking at the forwards, you wanted to chat a little bit about Johnny Gaudreau today. He's seemed to have a little bit more jump through the preseason. The coach has had some praise, I would say, from Daryl in the preseason and his media availabilities. What have you seen from Johnny through the preseason going into the regular season?
I've seen a more engaged player. would be the best. You know, Johnny has been really, really good in practice. He's been dangerous in the preseason. You know, his responsibility away from the puck is at a better level than I thought where it was at the majority of last season. You know, he looks like the guy that most people fell in love with here again, and he's going to have to be. So, you know, it ended well last season. It's off to a good start. You know, he was married in the off season. It's just a different way right now about how Johnny is carrying himself. And that's great news, because when I think about, you know, this team's forward group, two guys for me very much in the spotlight are going to be Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau. But Johnny Gaudreau has caught the eye of his head coach, who seems to be very pleased with what he's witnessing.
I think his energy level has been really good in terms of how he practices and carrying it over into a game. I think his work ethic has been really good. I think his finishing plays has been really good. You know, he's been primarily seen as a playmaker when you look at his stats and from coaching against him over the years. But I think that his desire to shoot the puck more and score more has showed up.
That one for me, Riley, you know, whether it's 5-on-5 or on the power play, is really, really important. And I think will continue to add to how dangerous he can be. We've always known that, you know, Johnny, when he's at the top of his game and has some time and space, can make plays. But in order to continue to, you know, be really effective in that area, you have to shoot the puck in both of those situations. And he is shooting it more. And I would make a comparison, not player to player, because Patrick Kane, to me, is, you know, one of the great offensive talents, you know, of the last decade or so. I mean, he is a brilliant, brilliant offensive player. But even in his arsenal the last few years, he, who is known for his incredible playmaking ability, also demonstrates that, you know, he can shoot it. And, you know, that's an area that Johnny, I'd have always described Johnny's shot over the years as probably mid-range, but I think it's better now. And just the ability to use it more often opens up more things for him and his teammates.
We're chatting with Peter Loubardias, our Calgary Flames insider, color voice of the Calgary Flames here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Just a couple more from me, Lou. We've talked about it ad nauseum, probably, that the Flames don't play until Saturday. What are the biggest challenges to this long layoff in between preseason and the regular season, would you say?
The biggest challenges is, you know, at a certain point in time, guys want to play. And, you know, with every passing night that you go home and you might flip on the TV, and some guys, you know, will do it and some other guys won't do it as much. You know, you're anxious. You want to get going. But like anything else, every coach, every manager, Riley, will tell you a couple of things. You can't change the schedule. So use the time. And for this team that had a preseason where they had to use a lot of different lineups and, you know, didn't really ever have an opportunity, let's face it, to, you know, play everybody in the spots and potential roles that they were looking for. You know, you use this week, you know, today, lots of work on special teams, one-on-one drills, you know, three-on-three, half ice. People don't always realize this, but there's plenty of new faces here, Riley, as you know, in key places. So, you know, if it gives you some extra days to practice and build some continuity and familiarity and chemistry, I think that's what you can best accomplish with the time. It's not ideal. No, that's been said, and not by me, but, you know, by Daryl. So the preseason schedule wasn't ideal. Waiting this long isn't ideal, but you have to take out of it what you can. And there will come a time, Riley, where you and I will be chatting on this program, and Logan will be chatting on this program with, well, if only the Flames had more practice time. Because that, in a very compact season, becomes at a premium when you have to, you know, have 4 days off a month and travel, and, you know, you're a team with a tough travel schedule, Flames with a 5-game road trip in October to basically kick things off almost, and then a 7-game massive trip in November. So you have the time, you use it on a day-to-day basis to the best of your ability, and even turning back to, you know, what we were chatting about a few minutes ago, if there's some players that are a little nicked or overworked or not quite feeling right, well, gives you a little extra time there to make sure everybody is as close to top health as you can for opening night two.
Yeah, for sure. And just one more from me here. We have 5 games on the NHL schedule tonight, Lou. Some intriguing matchups. 2 Canadian games, all Canadian games. Montreal and Toronto at 5:00. Leafs probably looking for some revenge in that one, and they get to play in front of their home crowd for the first time in a very long time. Not sure yet if Adam Brooks will draw in for the Canadians, as they've just poached him off of waivers from the Leafs.
Yeah, I'm hearing no for the former Regina Pat star.
Paquette in over him then.
Yes, but we'll see how that goes going forward. I would say my one thought on that particular game is, you know, no Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner was dinged up yesterday. He did skate this morning. So we'll see how he's feeling come game time. But if you're the Leafs, you can't get the playoff series back and blowing a 3-1 lead. But I'd be looking to potentially set a tone.
Yes.
So if you don't have some juice and you're wearing blue and white tonight, that's on you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have the Oilers and Canucks at 8:00. We get to see the new look top six from the Edmonton Oilers, although Draisaitl and McDavid look like they will continue to play together, and Nuge will be with Hyman instead of McDavid.
Yeah, I'm you know, of course, you know, we're always concerned here about the Oilers, and it's the Flames' first opponent, but I'll be more focused, to be frank, on the other team, and that's Vancouver. And, you know, there's very, very mixed thoughts about, you know, what to or not to expect from the Canucks. And I just thought last year, really from the get-go, for the Canucks, just never got off the ground. They were behind the eight ball from day one. Injuries, we know what happened later with the COVID, chasing it upstream, playing without Elias Pettersson for their last 27, 28 games. So everybody has signed. You know, I think they've upgraded in certain areas. I'm excited for that game, and I'm more excited to see what Vancouver has to offer in many ways than Edmonton.
We have one more Canadian team in action tonight. It's the Jets taking on the Ducks, a Jets team that, like they have for most of the time they've been in Winnipeg, pretty high expectations going into the season.
I think more so, Riley, now. In fact, and I would be in the same market. I don't want to undersell anybody. You know, I still think Toronto is an incredibly talented team. Winnipeg, with the ads on the back end, with Brendan Dillon coming in and Nate Schmidt coming over, has really, really solidified that group. You know, I'm not ready to go on record and say that I think they're the best Canadian team, but I really like their team. I really like their team a lot.
Yeah, and Cole Parfetti makes the opening night roster. He was a great junior, and there was some question on to whether he would be on the team or not. He has made that roster after a great camp. I thought he looked pretty good on Friday here in Calgary.
Yeah, you know what? You know, the product of Whitby, Ontario. And I think what certainly helped him, you know, he played really well at the World Junior last season, but people forget a little bit. He played at the World Championship too, and you know, acquitted himself well with the ice time that he received. And you know, when you have that kind of opportunity and you're around NHL guys on a regular basis, there's just no way that it wouldn't have helped him prepare and get ready. So I'm excited to see his trajectory. I've always been a fan, but Riles, I must admit, selfishly, if he's made available about the middle of December for another team, that won't break my heart.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Lou.
That team's never away from my mind. So
yeah, for sure. And there might be a couple.
Good on him. He's going to be a good NHL player for a long time. A
couple 16-year-olds from the Dub looking for a spot on that team as well.
Well, there's going to be one, and there's some other great ones. And one of these days, in fact, we'll do that. You know, we'll talk a little bit about some of those outstanding 16-year-olds in the Western Hockey League, and a little more on the Hitmen. And you know, can't wait to get back into the swing of things and have an opportunity to watch that level more than I've been able to so far this fall, too. So, yeah, exciting times.
Sure is, Lou. Thank you so much for your time. I've kept you a little long today, but
all good.
Good to chat hockey with you. And we have regular season hockey, so I had to get some Canadian questions in for you.
Well, absolutely. That's what we're here for. Hey, Rouse, have a great day, and everybody else have a great day, too.
All right. See you, Lou.
Flames Insider, Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
And the two games in action tonight that don't involve Canadian teams. We have Chicago, Colorado at 8 o'clock. No McKinnon there. He has COVID asymptomatic so far. And then a big one, the Rangers and the Capitals. Ryan Reeves versus Tom Wilson. I'm sure we will see fireworks at some point in that one. That one gets going at 5:30. Well, I'll run through the lines from practice for you today before we hit our first break. For the Flames up front, once again, it's Goudreau, Lindholm, Tkachuk, Dubé, Monahan, Mangiapane. The top six does not change. Richie jumps up with Lewis and Lucic on the third line today as Backlund not in the practice lineup. And then Gaudin centered Coleman and Oliver Shillington today for the fourth line. The D pairs, Hanifin, Anderson, Zadorov, Tanev, Valimaki, and Gudbranson, all of Backlund, Pitlick, Richardson, and Stone absent from practice today. That will do it for the first segment. Good chat with Lou there from Flames practice and all around the NHL as the regular season kicked off and continues. When we come back, we will do some Calgary Stampeders talk here from Dave Dickinson from earlier today. Welcome back to Sportsnet Today. Riley Pollock with you right now. As we chatted with Lou in the first segment, as usual, got some updates from practice, talked about Seattle, Vegas, Pittsburgh, Tampa, and the Canadian teams in action today. If you missed that, head to sportsnet.ca. That will be podcasted shortly. Calgary Stampeders have had a pretty good stretch of football the past couple weeks, beating the Saskatchewan Roughriders twice in a row to get right back in the playoff race. They take on the BC Lions this week. It'll be a tough game as the two teams tied in points, but the Stamps have played one more game. A big win for them if they want to get into the playoffs in the West or even a home playoff game as they sit 2 points back of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Dave Dickinson caught up with the guys from the morning show earlier today and chatted about their big wins against the Riders and looking ahead to the BC Lions.
Calgary Stampeders, a pair of wins over the Saskatchewan Roughriders, now right into the thick of it here. With the team sitting right in front of them, their next opponent. It's what you want, Dave Dickinson, right? You want to be playing these teams. That you want to beat the teams you need to beat. You're right there. This is what you want out of the schedule right now when you're playing well.
Yeah, I mean we're climbing. We're peeking out over the edge of this hole we dug. So, but we're at least got some vision. We can see where we can go. So, it's been a good little run. Let's see if we can keep it going.
Now, when I watched the game, The first series, you have Bo goes deep, touchdown, 7-0. I think that that's how you should probably start all the games. Just get a touchdown on the first drive. You know what I mean? Then you're playing with the lead. We've talked about this before, how different it is to have the lead. You're not chasing. I would think that's the way to go, Coach.
Well, that's pretty astute.
Yeah, well, I had it in my notes. I jotted it down because I didn't want to forget, because I think it could be valuable. Yeah.
And I can't argue with you now. Back-to-back where we've scored in the first drive, and that was something that was giving us major issues earlier in the year. So it was a nice play, to be honest. We weren't expected to score on it. We decided to move the pocket, get ball out on the edge, and we were playing with a new receiver, Nick Hawley, on the inside. He picked up the blitz, which gave us basically time to make that throw, and then Bo threw a dime out there to Markeith, and ultimately it was a great start for us.
Markeith Ambles, watching him this year, he's made some incredible plays, some incredible catches, and there have been some plays where it feels like, man, how did he not make that catch? Don't you feel like there's about four or five plays maybe over the course of these games where if he makes that reception, his numbers would just be through the roof, because he's right there as maybe one of the top receivers, I think, in the league.
You know, we've been leaning on him, especially with KJ out. The other thing he does extremely well is he's very physical in the run game and blocking, and he does a lot for us probably that people don't see and realize. But I agree that consistency is something he needs to work on, and even in practice that's been the case. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I know he hasn't played a ton of football. He's been here for a few years, but that consistency is something we're looking for.
Now, today's Wednesday, so that means closed practice day. This Hunchak to Huff thing you pulled off, is that a Wednesday? Would that have been a Wednesday thing last week that you worked on, perhaps?
Would have been a Wednesday thing,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I joked about it, because when we ran it, I called it a long foul ball because Colton threw it out of bounds. We didn't complete it, so it wasn't like we had a lot of confidence going in. I liked it, though. I felt like we had set it up the week before and that we could see the reaction that we could get off that field corner. Josh Huff really was patient with it and beat him. The safety didn't take the bait that much. Actually came over the top of it. But Colton threw a great ball, especially because he was getting pressured. But he has played quarterback in the past. It wasn't like he's never done it, but certainly not at the professional level.
Well, I was going to say, why Hunchak out of all of the – because you have athletes, and I'm sure at some point guys have played quarterback to some degree in high school or college maybe even. Why was Hunchak the guy for this play?
Well, we've thrown with other guys too. Markeith one for one, but only 6 yards. But one of the things I thought was good was he's left-handed, and hardly anyone runs any of these special plays to the left. It's really much harder for a receiver to be running to the left if he's right-handed to make that throw. So, you know, I don't even know if the other team realizes that. I really don't. But I've always felt like, in theory, running to the left, a little bit more surprise, a little more element of surprise. And it wasn't like you say that Sass took the big bait, but they took enough, and we made the play.
Yeah, if anything, you almost give them credit for not biting and leaving him completely wide open for a touchdown. Now, the problem is you had some nice plays. That was one of them. It then ends up in turnovers, whether it was interception, Malik Henry fumbles that ball, the Riders take over. Still some areas, and I don't know, when it comes to fumbles, you talk about cleaning things up. It's hard sometimes. Teams are going to make good plays on receivers and knock balls loose. But I guess still some things in terms of interceptions and the fumble, still some areas to clean up.
Yeah, you don't win very many games like as a -3 on the turnover ratio. And when we played BC the first time, we did have 5 turnovers from the quarterback position. We did 4 picks, and then we missed a short yardage with Michael O'Connor that I thought we should have had. And so ultimately, we were there, but we usually can't win those games. And even a -3 is very, very, very difficult to win a football game. So we kept him in it. And the big things were the defense, when we did make our mistakes, was able to keep him out of the end zone. So they rose up and helped. And it was a team win, no doubt about it. But we don't want to make a habit of it. We have been a little loose with the ball. We've started to clean up our penalties. And ultimately, now the next step for us and the progression of being a good football team and trying to get to the next stage is to try to clean up our turnovers.
Speaking of penalties, the procedure call late, for an A to do it a second time. That got to drive coaches crazy.
Yeah, but it's super loud, super loud. And, you know, people are jacked up a little bit, no doubt about it, and they just get twitchy. But to overcome it, I mean, that was big. I was, you know, honestly, I wasn't sure if we were going to kept that 5 yards. If Renee hit it really well and even missed, I felt like we might even get the single point to win. So that was a big 5 yards. Certainly, you know, we kept our composure and we stayed in there, and Renee hit the one right down the gut. So didn't cost us. But, yeah, if it doesn't work out for us, you're looking in the mirror. Certainly you're starting to wonder, you know, what are we doing here? Why aren't we doing a better job at keeping consistent play, consistent focus, and locked in on our assignments?
Dave Dickinson, coach of the Calgary Stampeders, our guest here on Sportsnet. Matty Rose.
Coach, I wanted to ask you just about the change that you've seen as your team has been able to move to in-person meetings a couple of weeks ago, especially, I think, for the linemen. The defensive and offensive linemen have kind of noted that it's been a big thing for them.
It's been a big thing for all of us. It's more enjoyable. Of course, we're winning now, so that's more enjoyable as well. So I really feel like football is a, you know, obviously a team-based sport, ultimate team sport, and I think you do have to kind of get together with your guys and do talk about more than just football. I mean, it's not like you have a lot of time when you're doing in-person meetings to do other than football, but you can have some interactions. You can, you know, tell a joke. You can, you know, look someone in the eye, and you demand accountability. And there's no doubt we're coaching better, and I think the players are responding. So we have had a couple, unfortunately, cases of COVID come through our locker room here, and that's one of the negatives. So, you know, you take your positives with your negatives, but we're doing our best. We're staying 6 feet apart. We wear masks. We make sure we all hit the sanitizer station before we come in. And we still do special teams and team meetings virtually with Zoom because we don't have facilities enough to have, you know, a full team environment. But it has been helping to do our position groups. And I got to thank the University of Calgary Dinos. They've opened up some areas for us on the other side that are their areas. And it's been good for our team.
Like, I think of a team like Winnipeg and where they're at right now and all the continuity they had coming into this season, it might have been a bit easier for them doing the Zoom meetings, but with your guys, you were having a lot of turnover. Like, I remember going into training camp, there were some players who were talking about being surprised at how big some of their teammates were, even though they'd talked to them for months over Zoom.
Yeah, in Winnipeg, they go to hotels. They meet. They've been meeting as a team the entire season. They haven't been doing virtual meetings. They've been making it work with big facilities, and they also have a massive facility at their locker room and their meeting areas at their stadium. So, you know, it's what it is. We've adjusted, but we're better. There's no doubt about it. We're doing a better job, and the players are responding.
You mentioned Richie Sindani yesterday, and after the game, Jameer Thurman was another guy where you said, you know, you're glad that these are guys that are getting asked about because they sometimes don't get the recognition that they deserve. Are there some other guys that were maybe missing that you think, you know, do a lot of work for your team, but maybe don't get the recognition or the numbers that they really deserve?
One of them is probably Cody Grace. I mean, Cody is really helped our team. I mean, he's been an amazing addition. His directional punting has been excellent, which we weren't sure was there. His hang time is big time. It is really helping our team out. I believe when you look at it, I do believe that's something that we are a better team. Our special teams is right there with the best in the league, and our kicker and punter have been part of that. And then the other addition, I think, on our O-line has been Ryan Seaver. I think Ryan, when he was hurt, I don't think people realized what type of loss that was for us. We've got a tough guy, a guy that works so well with Sean on the inside and really has made a huge difference coming back from his injury.
Now, have you seen that? Like, has that been one of the biggest factors in maybe what we've seen from Kadeem Carey, especially this past week?
Well, I think, yeah, I think our offensive line is starting to come together. I mean, Cambry Williams hadn't played a bunch this year, and he's now played back-to-back games. And, like, getting Steve's back in there, I think, is huge. I think it's, if there's one group that needs that continuity, it's the offensive line. So, I mean, I believe Winnipeg has been the same group the entire year, and they maybe have their first injury now. But we couldn't find a group of five that could stay together, and it showed. We just weren't working together. And I think Steve's twofold is also a good player, but he's got some extra toughness in there too. He really does. So And I think he'll be better. I think his foot is still healing. I think he is now fairly confident in it. And once he gets full confidence, I think he'll even take his game to another level.
Dave Dickinson, head coach of the Calgary Stampeders, is our guest. You mentioned, or Maddie there, Kadeem Carey, best game of the season, which is weird because I know he was maybe wasn't feeling it going into that game or was kind of nursing something, 109 yards. It felt like when you needed 5 yards, he'd get you six. If you needed three, he'd get you four. What a game he had going back to this one.
Yeah, he had back spasms. I don't know if anyone out there has had them. I used to watch games when I was younger and think, what the heck, back spasm, come on, you got to play. But if you get the wrong one, and it takes a good 24, 48 hours for you to feel like you can even function, and then, you know, you're a little nervous about your back because if it does lock up again, you're done. And so he didn't get a lot of reps in practice. I wasn't worried about that as the same opponent, but I was worried if he could actually keep it up for 60 minutes. Not only did he do that, he had his best game. And, you know, he really had 178, I think, total yards, was just the best player in the field for us. And it was nice to get him some looks and get him the ball a little bit more.
I guess two things, and you were kind of asked about both of them yesterday. Just from a coach, and I don't know what it would be, but I am curious. We're now in mid-October, and weather-wise, outside of Vancouver, but for you, you have to kind of expect just about anything. Do you, in terms of practice planning, length of practice, drills, when you start a practice, footwear, do you monitor things? Do you change things as the weather starts to potentially really turn here over the next few weeks?
We monitor it, but, you know, good luck in Calgary.
Yeah, I guess.
Good luck figuring out the weather in Calgary. So, you know, I don't hate practicing in poor weather. I mean, you're going to have to play in it at some point, so I really don't. I know maybe it doesn't look as good and you're cold or it's windy or rainy, but I don't have a problem with it at all. I mean, I'm not out there killing them drills. I get to wear a jacket or a hat and gloves. So, but I think it's important for your guys to practice into some inclement weather, if that's the word. I think it is important for you to think it's not always going to be just perfect out there. You know, it was one of the great things of playing in BC when I was out there. I never looked at a weather report. I didn't care. And, you know, when I looked at the schedule coming out, obviously didn't hurt my feelings that we have a couple games in BC late in the year because of the dome. So we know, though, ultimately you gotta play in the worst of weather in football, and it gets cold. So what type of team are we? So as far as practice and that, I'd like to practice in some inclement weather and see what our guys are made of.
So it is BC. You go back to week two. You lose 15-9. Is there any value in looking at week two game tape, or are you better served watching your most recent games and the Lions' most recent games?
Probably a little bit more than the latter. I mean, you can look at it, and we have, but, you know, they played pretty conservatively because they had the lead, and, you know, we weren't really handling their pass rush at all. They basically got after us with four-man rush, which you're able to drop eight guys, sometimes even nine guys. It's going to be tough to find windows and holes in that. So the thing that we did is we had great field position. We really had our special teams played well, and for us not to take advantage of that and really not score any points, 9 points just wasn't enough, obviously. I think it's more of a mindset of how they think they're going to play you and then see if you can find some tendencies. But they've evolved. They're a better team now, too, no doubt about it. They've got a good group, and Mike Riley is now fully healthy. That game, he did play pretty well, but we weren't even sure if he was going to play. So I think there was a lot of question marks in there, and we didn't answer any of those questions. So we need to now go out there and answer some of these questions and hopefully get our third win in a row.
Well, yeah, get it done. You're going to play, you may as well win, right? If you got to go all that way, you may as well win this thing. And again, remember, touchdown in the first series. I think it played a big part in that football game.
Okay, I'll mark it down. Yeah, make sure we get that done for you.
Tell Huff, get it into the game plan. That'd be great. Dave, good luck, man. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, talk to you guys next week. Take care.
There you go, Dave Dickinson with the guys from the morning show. He gets us ready for BC, chats about what has gone on with the team this week in practice and the couple games against the Riders as well. Stampeders 4-5 on the season, in a tie with BC for third in the West, but have one more game played and 2 points back of the Riders for second in the West and a home playoff game. Stampeders and Lions go Saturday in Vancouver at 5 o'clock. I'm in the Iconic studio powered by Iconic Electric and Controls today. It's our fourth year partnering with Iconic Electric and Controls, and we're proud to welcome them on board as the official Sportsnet 960 The Fan studio sponsor. Iconic, proudly owned and operated from Western Canada since 2008, and they take great pride in giving back to the communities that we all work and live in. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Well, that will do it for the first hour of Sportsnet today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm warming you up for the big show, which starts at 2 o'clock with Logan Gordon and Pat Steinberg. They will be live from the Dome today as they've watched practice, and we'll have a report on you with all things Calgary Flames and much more. A very busy show coming up in the big show today. We have one more hour here on Sportsnet today. Eric Engels of Sportsnet, the Canadiens insider, will join us next, and we will have Flames audio from for you from practice, and look ahead to tonight's NHL matchups in the final segment coming up around 1:30. Eric Engels, when we come back, this is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Sportsnet Today. I'm Riley Pollock, your host today. Logan Gordon will join us shortly from the Hot Stove Lounge. It was a busy first hour as we chatted all things Flames and Calgary Stampeders. But we have some Canadian teams that are finally hitting the ice for the regular season tonight, one of them being the Montreal Canadiens. And for that, we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to chat with Eric Engels, our Sportsnet Montreal Canadiens insider. Eric, how are you doing today? It's a game day.
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's good to have regular season hockey back on the TV. It was a fun first night, and I don't imagine it will get any less fun on night number two.
Me neither. I think it should be great. Montreal-Toronto, long-standing rivalry coming out of a playoff series. Let's get at it.
Absolutely. Season opener tonight against the Leafs, a team that probably has some redemption on their mind at home in front of their own fans for the first time in a long time. How do you feel the Habs can weather that inevitable opening storm from the Leafs tonight? I know they don't have Matthews or anything, but I'm sure there's going to be a push early from this Toronto Maple Leafs team.
Well, I think Montreal has to weather its own storm, too. They don't have Carey Price. They don't have Joel Edmondson. They don't have Shea Weber. They don't have Paul Byron. I could keep going. There's a couple more players, Sammy Niku. This is Philip Deneau is gone. Jesperi Kotkaniemi is with the Carolina Hurricanes. Granted, a couple players came in here. Mike Hoffman's not available. You know, like this Canadiens team has been through a ton of adversity over the last year. They have been the underdogs virtually everywhere they've gone. And that'll be the case again tonight, even against a Toronto team that doesn't have Austin Matthews with them. And, you know, there is an animosity and rivalry factor that should stimulate both teams. It's the first game of the year. It's going to be exciting. Both teams are going to be interested in playing the game. You know, if you watched the hockey last night, it really is a dramatic jump from what you saw in the preseason, like right off the hop immediately. And I hope that's the case in this game. You know, there's always the threat that it could be a little bit disjointed. You know, teams are not operating as well-oiled machines in game one. But, you know, if you go back to January of last year, I think the first game was a great game between Toronto and Montreal. And I think, you know, then they played another 16. And I just think it's going to be a great game tonight. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me as well. And you kind of mentioned that the Montreal Canadiens are a bit of underdogs. There's a lot of people talking, not giving them much of a chance going into the season. What, if any, reasons would you give to suggest that the people doubting the Montreal Canadiens are wrong?
Well, I actually did predict they'd make the playoffs this year, although that's more based on a feeling than something real tangible. Because honestly, you look at what happened in the offseason with Weber gone and Deneau gone and Kotkaniemi gone, and understandably Christian Dvorak coming in and Mike Hoffman and all these guys, you know, and David Savard. I think there's going to be a bit of a drop off at 5-on-5, but I do believe that their power play is going to be a lot better. And, you know, you look at, you know, over the years, I think it's really like usually 9 or 10 of the top 12 power plays in the league, those teams make the playoffs. And I think the Canadiens might be good enough to finish top 10 in the power play this year with what they have, with Cole Caulfield here for an entire season, with Mike Hoffman soon to be coming back into the Canadiens lineup, with Jonathan Drouin healthy and ready to get back into playing games. Jeff Petrie's up at the top of the first unit. There's a lot of different pieces there. Dvorak is a good power play player that I think could stimulate the power play. Penalty killing, they finished 23rd in the league last year. Granted, they've lost a number of players that are key to penalty killing, but you saw what they did in the playoffs. You know, they really found a recipe to be successful in on the penalty kill. I think there was one point where they killed off like 38 straight penalties. They finished 92%. So if they can bridge the gap between what happened in the regular season and the playoffs, which I believe they can, because they found a way to work together, I think they can have a strong penalty kill. And it's really going to come down to goaltending. You know, Jake Allen did a really good job last year. And if he can pick up where he left off and give the Canadiens a good start so that Carey Price comes back and is feeling good about himself and healthy and ready to go again, that's going to be the big key for this team. You know, goaltending is supposed to be its strength. We don't know how long Carey Price will be gone. We know it'll be a minimum of 30 days, but Mark Bergevin seemed really confident that he'll be back and that he'll be okay. And all the people that I've spoken to have suggested that Carey's doing okay. So, you know, the hope is that he comes back and is able to do what he did in the playoffs, because he was magnificent. And, you know, I think Jake Allen is a really good goaltender, and the two of them as a combination could be one of the best tandems in the league. So that's what they have going for them. Whether or not it all works out, you know, you need so many things to go right to win in this league and to make the playoffs. And right now with the parity in the league, there's so little separating each team, regardless of what you think of this one or that one on paper. So, you know, that's why I say when I have them making the playoffs, it really is based on a feeling, because I think that they're a team that I think anybody looking at them on paper would say, you know, they're a bubble playoff team, a team that'll be in the mix. I just happen to think that they might just make it instead of might just miss them. So we'll see what happens.
For sure. And yeah, I agree. Jake Allen was a great secondary option when Price was hurt down the stretch there. And it's his net now, so we'll have to see how it goes. Nick Suzuki got a big payday yesterday, 8-year, $63 million extension. Just wanted to grab your thoughts on this deal for the young number one center on the Habs.
Well, my thoughts are that it's extremely encouraging for the Canadiens that Nick Suzuki wanted to talk deal at this stage. You know, he had every reason to bet on himself, wait around, potentially sign a 3 or 4 year deal and walk away with a much bigger payday after that if he continues on the same projected line that he's been on. You know, the thing with the Canadiens too is why they got this done now, you know, versus where they were at with Jesperi Kotkaniemi and allowing that get to an offer sheet situation, is they know exactly what Suzuki is and what they believe he's going to be. And there's been no evidence to suggest that he won't become, a bona fide top line center in this league. He's been in that role, you know, since his rookie season, pretty much since, you know, 3/4 of the way through his rookie season, and he's done really well. He's put up more points per game in the playoffs than he has in the regular season. So he stepped up at the right times. You know, the biggest thing that I take away from it is that it's an 8-year deal. It's a cap hit that's less than $8 million a season. And 4 years from now, when Nick Suzuki was slated to potentially get to unrestricted free agency, he'd probably be looking at a much higher number, especially with hockey-related revenue likely to rebound, you know, and inflate player salaries by then. You know, where the pandemic obviously affected revenue of the league. It's bouncing back a little bit now, maybe even stronger than people imagined when they were making projections in 2020 and even last summer. And, you know, we've got a couple more seasons, I think, to go through, but there is going to come a point where a lot of the guys who signed bridge deals, you know, you think of a guy like Elias Pettersson specifically, is going to have a case for a really big contract coming out of that, but also that pandemic affected reality where all of a sudden the revenues will finally be in a place to really rebound and grow is going to help his case. So I think it was essential for the Canadiens to get this done now, and they have to be thrilled about it that Nick Suzuki wanted to sign up for 8 years and leave you know, potentially a bigger paycheck on the table because he's betting on himself now and believes in himself now and is happy with the deal that was offered to him. And that's a healthy, good situation, and that's what you want to have with your number one center. So I think all parties got to be pretty happy with that one.
Yeah, for sure. We're here with Eric Engels, our Montreal Canadiens insider from Sportsnet. I see that Brett Kulak is paired up with Jeff Petrie, it looks like, for tonight's game. Is there questions about this Canadiens decor with Weber not on the team? I really like Brett Kulak, but he's kind of been that fourth to sixth defenseman for most of his career.
Well, he's kind of been that fourth to seventh defenseman for most of his career.
Enough.
And part of the reason he is with Jeff Petrie is because they have familiarity playing with each other. And there's a few new pieces on this blue line. And with Joel Edmondson injured to start the season, you know, the Canadiens really had a hard time trying to figure out who to mix and match with who, because I think Dominic Ducharme is really dead set on balancing out the minutes a lot more than we saw in the playoffs last year, where they virtually relied on only four defensemen. Without Shea Weber, obviously that's a huge gap. You know, David Savard has got to come in and really play as the best version of himself, which I think we saw in the playoffs with Tampa Bay, but didn't quite see with Columbus before he got to Tampa Bay. You know, Ben Chiarot is a key piece on this blue line, much more so as the regular season moves along and you can get away with a little bit more, and he plays that nasty physical style that is quite intimidating. He's a throwback defenseman. You know, I think that's the dynamic that the Canadiens like within their blue line, but there's no question this is the biggest area of concern on this team. Can this defense hold up? Well, Chris Wideman coming in from the KHL, where he was named top defenseman because he put up a ton of points there, be able to redeem his NHL career here in Montreal and bring some offensive flair to a blue line that desperately needs it? Will Alex Romanov be able to take that next step this year? You know, these are the big questions being asked here. And, you know, because there was so many new bodies, they are looking for that familiarity factor between Kulak and Petrie. And I think it's a great opportunity for Kulak because A, he's up for a contract this season, and B, you know, he has really proven himself to be a very solid defenseman all throughout his time in Montreal. And he's never really given that much of a fair shake because they don't see him as a special teams guy. So his role has really been reduced to just 5-on-5 ice time. And, you know, with Edmondson coming in, serving as the ideal partner for Petrie, that kind of bumped Kulak out of a spot. So, you know, now he's got an opportunity to show that he deserves to be in the lineup all the time. I think he's a really, really good skater. He's strong coming out of his own end. He moves the puck well, good first pass. I'd like to see him bring more offense with those skills. You know, those skills should translate into more offense. And if they did, they would help him secure more of a full-time job playing night in, night out. And, you know, you look at the depth of the blue line, it's thin. It was thin a year ago, and it's thinner now without Shea Weber there and with Joel Edmondson injured. So, you know, this is a huge area of concern for the Canadiens, and there's going to have to be some surprises for it not to be.
Just a couple more on some individual players here. Where does Adam Brooks fit into this lineup? Is he going to draw in tonight, or do you think it'll be Cedric Paquette on that fourth line?
Cedric Paquette's going to play tonight. Adam Brooks is going to have to find his way to acclimatize in Montreal, understand how they do things, what their systems are and all that. But I think down the line, going to be a really good opportunity for Adam Brooks to establish himself. And, you know, I think, you know, talking with different people, he's a guy with a lot of talent, with offensive talent. Is he good enough to play in the top six? The answer seems to be no. And is he suited to be a fourth line center? Well, the answer also kind of seems to be no when he's up against a gritty type of guy. You know, that was what our friend Sean McKenzie was kind of saying to me today. And I could see that based on what Brooks' skill set is, what he's been able to do in limited time in the NHL, what he's done in the AHL, putting up numbers that, you know, he's just kind of one of those in-between guys. But he could have a great opportunity with Montreal and the way they like to play. And obviously with the depth of Toronto's forward group was kind of pushed out of the pack. So, you know, he comes to Montreal. I think he's got a real opportunity because I don't see Cedric Paquette as a night in, night out fourth line center. I just don't think at this stage of his career that he's going to be able to handle that responsibility every single game. So, you know, he's in that mix. Ryan Poehling, who went down to Laval after what was not a great camp, you know, he had a great opportunity to come in and with a job wide open for him to take that fourth line center role, and he just it wasn't that he played bad. He just didn't grab it. And I think, you know, they'll use some development opportunity for him in Laval and give him another look if they need to. If it's not working out between Brooks and Paquette, they've got options now. That's why they made that waiver claim. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I we're talking about the fourth line center job. I don't think it's the most pivotal job on the team, though it naturally in a market like Montreal, there's a lot of scrutiny, whether you're the fourth line center or the starting goaltender or whatever it is. So we'll see what shakes out there. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Adam Brooks fits into the whole equation.
Jonathan Drouin, he took a leave of absence from the team last year in the last few regular season games and throughout the playoffs. How has he looked in camp, and what role do you think he fills for this Montreal Canadiens team up front?
He's looked great. He looks loose and free. He's in great shape. He's mentally, physically feeling well by all reports. You know, Josh Anderson, who's been living with him, has been talking him up quite a bit about how, you know, he feels and how he looks. And we've seen it for ourselves in terms of his demeanor. And just he just appears healthy and happy. And that's what he wanted coming out of a situation where he was dealing with anxiety and insomnia for a number of years and didn't know how to deal with it and finally decided he needed a break from hockey. It's a great story. You know, the hope is that he comes back and has the best season of his career and that he gets exactly what he wants, that he's happy and enjoying the game. And if those things are happening, he's a game-breaking talent. You know, this is a guy that can really make a huge difference for the Canadiens this year. At 5-on-5, certainly, definitely on the power play. He's a guy with the type of talent that could be a top producer in this league. It just hasn't happened so far throughout his career. You know, we've seen stints where he's unbelievable. We've seen stints where you can't figure out what's going on with him. Well, now we have better insight into that. So let's see what Jonathan Drouin looks like this year, because if he's the guy that was drafted third overall that has that ability and plays that way on a more consistent basis because he's dealing with the issues that he's had for a very long time and is better equipped to deal with them, and he's that on a more consistent basis, well, watch out. You know, this could be a phenomenal year for him that potentially ends with the Masterton trophy in his hands. And if that happens, I think Jonathan Drouin will be happy. I think Canadiens fans would be thrilled for him. I think the management team and the coaching staff and all his teammates would be thrilled for him. And it would go a long way towards helping the Canadiens secure that playoff spot that I suggested that they might grab.
Awesome. And yeah, everyone, you should be rooting for Jonathan Drouin this season, as a great story from him. I'm glad to hear that he looks healthy and happy. Just one more from me before I let you go, and that's on Cole Caulfield. He's now officially into his rookie year after mostly playoffs that he's played. Do you see him as a favorite for the Calder, and what are some realistic expectations for the young sniper?
Well, obviously Cole's a favorite for the Calder. I think he's the betting favorite for the Calder right now, but he's got some good company there. You've got Spencer, mostly guys that he's played with on that national development team in the U.S., but Spencer Knight will be in the mix. Another Hobie Baker candidate last year, I believe, will be in the mix, and Shane Pinto in Ottawa. I think he looked fantastic in the preseason. He's earned a job with the Senators. You know, Trevor Zegras, if he plays a full season in Anaheim, could be a candidate. You know, it was Zegras that said that Caulfield might score 40 goals this year. I'm not setting the bar that high. I watched a ton of Cole Caulfield before he came to Montreal. You know, I watched a ton of Wisconsin games. I watched him with the U.S. development team. And my belief going back then was that when this kid plays a full season in the NHL, if he gets a full 82 games in, he will score a minimum 24 goals in his first season. And nothing that I've seen from him since would have me move that line. Like, I do believe, and that would be a tremendous rookie season. You know, I do believe playing with Nick Suzuki and Tyler Toffoli to start, but he'll have good players to play with no matter where he moves around this lineup. And what he can do on the power play and what his natural ability is, I think 24 goals is where I set the bar for him. I will not be surprised if he scores more than that. I do believe he'll score at least that much. And, you know, the one thing you got to watch out with Cole Caulfield, you know, yes, he's going to have to develop from a defensive standpoint. He's going to have to develop from sustaining offensive zone pressure a little bit more and being less of a rush player. Those are things that need to happen as a smaller player who's playing his first games in the NHL. You know, he played a very brief amount last year and played in the playoffs and played exceptionally well. But, he's a much better playmaker than people realize. He's not just a goal scorer. He's not just a shot. His hockey sense is elite. His teammates believe he is an absolute elite talent. I believe that too. And I think he's going to show it this year.
Eric, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to the Canadiens and Leafs game. And I'm sure we'll chat more throughout the season and get updates on the Montreal Canadiens. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, you too.
There you go. Eric Engels of Sportsnet covering the Montreal Canadiens joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials. Health protocols in place, pickup and delivery also available. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Well, we've covered a lot of hockey in the first hour and a half, and that will continue next as Logan Gordon will join me for the final segment before we take you to the big show at 2 o'clock with Pat and Logan. This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the final segment of Sportsnet Today. I'm Riley Pollack, now joined by Logan Gordon from the Calgary Flames Hot Stove Lounge at the Saddle Dome. Logo, it was a lonely hour and a half without you. I'm glad that you're finally here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. You've been rolling well. Died in the ship for us, getting us ready for the big show, and we got everything prepped here, ready from practice to go, and excited for another good show today.
Me as well. Logan and Pat Steinberg will be doing the big show from 2 to 6 today from the Saddle Dome, but Logan was kind enough to help me out here in the last half an hour. And Logo, I wanted to start here because I've heard a bit of it for the past couple days with Lou and Daryl. There's been some high praise for Johnny Gaudreau and his attitude and just how he's played in the preseason. So I want to ask you, what do you think about the different energy from Johnny Gaudreau, if you have seen one? And what are your expectations from Johnny this season? And I also want to open this to the text line. So let me and Logan know at 960-960. What are your expectations for Johnny Gaudreau this season?
I would say I have fairly high expectations of Johnny heading into the season. I think that anytime you talk about a guy who's the number one offensive catalyst for a team, there's always going to come with high expectations. And I think that's no different this year. But I think that importance is almost ramped up in a couple ways, Riley, because of it being a contract year. I think it's a big year for the team as a whole. When you talk about their performance on the ice, I think Johnny's as motivated as probably majority of his teammates are to respond from last year. And it was a down year for not only him, but for everybody. And I think that, you know, given the opportunity to be back in full buildings, back to a normal-ish NHL season, they're back to traveling, they're going to be back to having fans in the building. I think all of that leads into that energy that you feel around Johnny, you feel around the team. And make no mistake, a contract year for Johnny means a lot for his performance, not only for the Flames, but potentially for him from an individual standpoint to stand out to other teams or anybody who might be interested in acquiring him, because until that's settled or we get a definitive answer as to what's going to happen with him in Calgary, there are going to be the people that, you know, wonder about his future here. So I've really liked what I've seen from him all year, all preseason, I should say, the Johnny Gaudreau that we're used to here in Calgary, being the guy that leads the rush offensively, is dangerous in the offensive zone, is creative, making plays down low. I've loved, and you know this, what's been the line of him, Lindholm, and Tkachuk this preseason. That's what we'll see on Saturday, and maybe that changes throughout the season, but his level of importance doesn't change for me. I expect him to be Calgary's leading scorer. I expect him to be dangerous on power play one, and I think a lot of Flames fans probably share that expectation.
Yeah, I like if Johnny's around or over 30 goals, it's probably a good season. And I think he might have to be over that 30-goal mark if we want to see this Flames team in the playoffs, as he's going to be relied on heavily to put pucks in the net for a team that might have a little bit of trouble doing so or is just happy to play defense more than offense. So, yeah, if Johnny's in, you know, a point-per-game-ish range, it's a great bounce back season for him. And if he can help out on the defensive side a little bit more, that's what I'm kind of expecting from him, is to be around 30 goals or so. Would that be kind of the mark that you're looking at as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think that given everything that we've seen through Johnny throughout his years in Calgary, right around a point per game is usually the set standard for him, and I think that that doesn't necessarily change under Daryl Sutter. Just because they want to be more defense and detail-oriented, they're still going to need to score goals on a nightly basis and get in a position to be up on the opposition and win hockey games. So I think that understanding he's probably not going to be the 99-point guy every single year that he was in 2018-19 is important. But, you know, a 70-80-point Johnny Gaudreau around that 30 goal mark, I mean, even 25, and you're pressing up on assists. That's really his key to all of it, is the playmaking and setting up his line mates, whether it be on the first line of the power play, to be successful is equally important to his game. So yeah, I'd say that's fair. Right around a 70 to 80 point year, I think is right where the Flames would like to see him. And I think if that happens, then the team is probably as a whole having a little bit more success when he's, you know, leading the ship heading that way offensively.
Yeah, for sure. And a few texts at 960-960 on what the listeners think their expectations for Johnny Gaudreau are. 30 goals, 45 assists. That one from Jordan, and that's kind of right where we are as well. This one on the other side, Gaudreau is happy that it's his last year as a Flame. He wants to perform for a contract somewhere else. I mean, that could be the case, but for everything we've heard, he would love to stay a Flame, so not too sure on that one. I expect Johnny Gaudreau to have his best year. I think he'll play well on both sides of the ice. Let's hope for the best, as the Flames will need him at his best. That is absolutely for sure. If he has a down year, there's no way this team makes the playoffs. This one says, well said, Logo. Contract year for Gaudreau means whether he stays or goes, he will perform. If he stays, it's a good year. Will be critical for the core and identity of this team moving forward. And I think that's a good point. I think, you know, it seems like in a contract year, most players seem to perform at or above expectations, and I wouldn't expect anything less for Johnny. Another one here saying he was close to a point per game last year. Don't think it was a down year, just a bad year for the team. And I don't know, like, you could just kind of see it with Johnny last year. Not necessarily in the points, but just it wasn't his best season. It wasn't his best effort, I don't think, night in and night out. And it you can see the mood change even in the preseason so far, Logo.
Yeah, a lot of it, I mean, look, the stats are important. I'm never going to say that, you know, what the numbers say don't bear relevance to the situation. They certainly do. But at the end of the day, it's also more than that. It's body language. It's, you know, a general feel for the game and a day-to-day process. It's how you feel around all of it. It's more than that. It's a 200-foot game, more than just offense. So it's important, but it's not, at the end of the day, all of it, right? It's not the whole picture, just looking at simply what he put up as numbers last year.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So that's our thoughts on Johnny Gaudreau. Continue to text in. We will read your texts on what your expectations of Johnny are this season. Some other talk from practice today, Logo. We saw Oliver Shillington up with the forwards on the fourth line today. Interesting. Valimaki was partnered up with Gudbranson. Do you think this is kind of a hint that maybe it's Valimaki on night one?
I think so. I think that that's probably the predominant thought coming out of practice today, and understanding there were a handful of regulars that weren't there. We didn't have Backlund out there today. We're still waiting on confirmation from Stone, Pitlick, and Richardson's injury status. Still sort of up in the air. I do think that that leads towards a feeling from the coaching staff that they're leaning towards Valimaki. I know plenty of people, it's a fan favorite thought among Flames fans that Oliver Shillington, you know, should be given the opportunity to play forward. I don't think that's what this means. I think simply that they just needed a body to help fill out the line rushes, and given the fact that Yuso was in his natural spot at a position that he could easily be playing on Saturday, tells me that they're trying to get him the minutes with Gudbranson, the time that they need together to understand communication, chemistry, all of that ahead of time, so that come Saturday they're ready to go. I don't think that it's the be-all, end-all thing for Shillington to not be in the lineup on Saturday, but I do think as of right now, it kind of feels as though we're leaning towards a Valimaki-Gudbranson start to the season for that third pairing in Edmonton.
Yeah, for sure. And me and Dumas kind of talked about this yesterday, but we see Zadorov with Tanev again at practice, assuming that's going to be the second pair to start. Do you think there's quite a bit of leash for Zadorov and a good Branson, who we saw, you know, some tough games from in the preseason? Do you think there's a lot of leash? Do you think that for Shillington and Valimaki to both be in the lineup in a game, something's gone quite wrong?
I won't say gone wrong. I think in a good situation, Riles, it could be a situation gone right. If Valimaki and Shillington, both young guys drafted in this organization and developed in this organization, find their way into the lineup, you know, to turn it around, I think it could mean a good thing. And I think it could mean that both of them are playing at a level that Daryl Sutter feels both of them deserve to be in the lineup every day. Of course, there's the other side to it that perhaps some guys on the depth chart ahead of them aren't playing as well, and that's why they're in the lineup. But Daryl's not going to put anybody in the lineup who hasn't earned that right or hasn't given it 100% in his mind and isn't ready to go. So I don't know what the leash looks like in all of this, especially for a good Branson and a Zadorov who, frankly, you know, salary plays into all of this. They're not being paid the money that they're being paid to sit out and develop and learn. They're being paid that money because they're established NHLers in this league and are expected to contribute to this team. That's why they get paid as much as they do. That being said, do I see a world where some of that changes? Yeah, I think that matchups can drive that. I think if Daryl feels one night that a Shillington and Valimaki in the lineup suit up a matchup better against the opposition, I don't think he's afraid to go away from that. We have to understand they have 8 defensemen here. It doesn't do anybody any good to sit out for the entire season or to sit out for 10 games. If you have 8 defensemen, I would expect them to use those 8 defensemen in different situations, whether it's just, you know, on the other side of a back-to-back, giving a guy a night off, or simply trying something different to get a better result. I think all of that's on the table when you have all these options. I think we have to look at it as a positive thing for this team, Riley, that they have that depth and they are going to be able to use it. Daryl's going to be able to do different things depending on who's playing well for them and who's not. I think that that's going to be a big factor for this defense core, because really only 3 guys have set themselves apart from the group that we talked about preseason-wise, and Hanifin, Anderson, and Tanev. I think there's a lot of room for trying different things, adapting to the matchups, and maybe coming up with pairings that we haven't seen because they do have 8 guys total with the team right now.
Yeah, and that's very well put. And Daryl has said that, you know, prior to the final cuts, that everyone still at camp was going to play for the Calgary Flames at some point. And he will not be shy to use all 8 of his defensemen that are up. That is for sure, Logo. One more on the practice and the lines. Lindholm, Tkachuk, Gaudreau has been skating together the last 2 days. Do you expect that to change if Coleman comes back? Or do you think maybe they have a good game against the Oilers Saturday and, you know, Coleman finds himself with a Mangiapane and Monahan?
Do I expect it to change? I can't say for sure I can expect it to change ahead of next Monday. I think that there's a chance that it stays the same regardless of Coleman's status, because that line has established themselves at different points late last season and even into this preseason. I think a lot of it, Riley, just depends on what sort of output they get on Saturday, right? Like, it's hard to say if they have a strong game and Daryl feels like they're fine together and he likes a different combination on the second line to put Coleman in there. I don't expect him to change it, but at the same time, this isn't the ideal start to the year. We don't really know, thanks to a couple of injuries and thanks to the suspension, what the team's ideal pairings and lines would look like heading into their first game. So maybe we see that as early as Monday morning on a game day skate ahead of the Ducks game and the home opener on Monday. But I think there's as much a chance as any that Daryl sees a good performance from that line of Tkachuk, Lindholm, and Gaudreau on Saturday and has no reason to change that heading into Monday. But like I said, so much is dependent on matchups. Does he feel as though that line is going to be as effective against the Ducks? Or does he want to, you know, this isn't how he wanted to line things up because of the suspension. So as soon as that's done on Saturday, he goes right back to what he wanted to see on Monday. it'll be something to watch, because I'm curious, if they do have a good game, do they roll with that, or do they immediately change up to what they would have done had Coleman not been suspended?
Yeah, and I think I'm on the same wavelength there. You know, if Johnny and Lindholm and Tkachuk combined for four goals on night one or something like that, it's probably going to be tough to go away from them. Mm-hmm. But in no way do I think that's they're going to have permanent lines on the top six all season long. So, yeah, we haven't seen the top six play together at all in the preseason because of the injuries and the suspensions you mentioned. So, starting with that line, we assume, on Saturday, and we'll see how it goes on Monday, Logo. Five games on the NHL schedule tonight, Logo, but two yesterday. What did you think of opening night in the regular season?
It was nice to have it back. I think that was my main takeaway. It was nice to be able to watch some regular season hockey and get away from the preseason and see guys in the lineups that you recognize the names and you can actually dive into actual results, I think is always nice. You get away from that preseason feel, Riley. And you know, you've watched enough hockey that, you know, everything comes with an asterisk or a, yeah, but it's preseason in the preseason. And it gets to be, you know, especially after, you know, eight Flames games and however many we've gone through the last couple of weeks, by the time you're at the end of it, you're just ready for regular season hockey and ready to talk about things that have an actual outcome on the season. Last night was a lot of fun. Pittsburgh showed up big time in a game against Tampa Bay that they kind of ruined the party of the banner raising. And I think it showed how important that Jeff Carter acquisition was last season for them. And when you're down your top two centers, obviously everybody's playing up a step or two. Jeff Carter going to be huge in that role for the Pittsburgh Penguins. If they are able to tread water or at least keep their head above water while waiting for Sid and Malkin to come back, then there's a chance that they're still a contender in that division. It's a tough division to play in, but if you're going to give that sort of effort on a nightly basis, you're going to be in a pretty good spot when those guys do come back into your lineup. And the evening game was fantastic between Vegas and Seattle. There were so many different storylines to talk about. You know, Seattle's first game in the league, Vegas coming back with that strong transition game, gets up 3-0, but the you know, upstart Seattle team fires back and isn't fazed by it. There was the great graphics show pregame. It was neat to see the ESPN broadcast. I loved all of it. Did you feel the same last night?
Oh, I had a great night watching hockey, and Pittsburgh definitely surprised me with how they came out. Tampa didn't really look like they had it at all at any point last night. Just no juice from them. But it was a great game, and then that Seattle-Vegas game was so much fun. I mean, Seattle comes out flying, and then somehow the Golden Knights get two goals in, you know, on the counter, and thought it might be a bit of a beating, but they battled back, and welcome to the NHL, Seattle. You get beaten by a questionable goal.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Chandler Stephenson with 8:33 remaining, just for, like, literally 30 seconds after Morgan Geeky ties it at 3, Vegas back on the transition, gets one in, and it's a tough one, Riley. I was really divided. I saw Twitter last night was there were people that was a clear kick in. There was other people, you know, going by the definition of the rule that you can change the angle of your skate to deflect the puck in. It's a tough one to overturn. You feel bad for Seattle on their first night in the league that it's got to come down to a goal like that, especially after such a strong performance from them battling back. But look, you said it best. Welcome to the NHL. It's going to happen to you some nights, and it's not the best thing, but it's one game. It's out of 82. You got 81 more to go, and for Seattle, move on to the next one, take the positives out of it, and move on. I think overall that doesn't change the fact that they still played a pretty good game, and we got our first impression of what that team's going to be under Dave Hakstol.
Yeah, for sure, and you guys were kind of talking about how you thought Seattle could be a Pacific Division playoff team on yesterday's show, I believe, and nothing I saw yesterday changes that narrative at all. I think that they're going to be competitive, and you know, they got some good vets on that team, and I think they'll be in it right down to the wire.
I think so too. I think that the main takeaways that I had from last night looking at Seattle is this is going to be a high pressure, hard working team. They're going to be in on the forecheck. I think Dave Hakstol understands the fact that they're not going to score goals in the same way that we saw Vegas score goals last night with, you know, a quick transition game and a lot of skill. And that's just not in the makeup of Seattle. But they did a good job last night especially, and I think we'll continue to do this season, Riley, is working hard to create goals. I think that's what I saw. My main takeaway from Seattle last night was this is a team that understands their lot and understands their group really well and are trying to work to their strengths. And it showed up last night. I've had questions. I said it to Pat yesterday on the big show. I'm not 100% where goals are going to come from this team. There's a lot of guys that are great secondary options, but no one that's ever shouldered the load for a long period of time as the only guy on their previous team. Clearly, Dave Hakstol feels, and that coaching staff feels, like doing it as a group, working as a five-man unit and working hard in the offensive zone to create your own opportunities is the best way to go. And I couldn't agree more based on how they did it last night against a very good team. Vegas might be, you know, the second newest NHL team, but they are as good as anybody in this league when they turn it on. So for Seattle to come out, yes, they lose in night one. That's the biggest takeaway. But the fact of the matter is they showed up pretty well. I think their fans are going to be happy that this is the kind of team they're going to get in Seattle on a nightly basis.
And I can't wait for night one in Seattle with
yes,
this team. That'll be
absolutely
fun. Absolutely. Five games
those
on the
white jerseys are nice,
yeah,
too. I like those quite
really
a bit.
I really did as well. Five games on the NHL schedule tonight, starting at 5 o'clock. It's the Habs and the Leafs. No Auston Matthews for the Leafs. No Carey Price, Shea Weber. Paul Byron is out as well for the Habs. Joel Edmondson as well. It's kind of a pasted together decor. Be interesting to see how they perform. We have Kulak matched up with Petrie, so we'll have to see about that. What do you expect from this? I'm expecting a big push from the Leafs in front of their home fans for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's an obvious one. I expect the Maple Leafs to come out hard, even without Auston Matthews in the lineup tonight. This is a team that I think wants to quickly erase any memory of what last season was and that loss to Montreal in the playoffs and establish themselves as a strong team once again. And I don't want to say Montreal's down and out no matter what, but they've gone through so much change and so much transition player-wise, skill-wise, being without some of those guys that you mentioned. Anything can happen in these rivalries, and I'm sure they're excited to get their season going. I just think that given the expectations and the pressure on the shoulders of a Toronto team that had yet another playoff failure, probably puts them into a different level of, I don't want to say a different level of excitement, but a different level of say, pressure going into these sort of games, the pressure to perform on a nightly basis. And there are a lot of guys that are getting paid a lot of money in Toronto that have underperformed and don't like hearing that narrative on a day-to-day basis. The quickest way to get away from that is to start winning hockey games and have the focus go back to this season and what's coming forward instead of past failures. So, yeah, I'm expecting in, you know, just over 3 hours' time that the Toronto Maple Leafs are a very motivated group to put a beating on Montreal. I don't know that they'll be as successful, but I'm sure that's going to be their goal to try to erase all of those bad memories from last season.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's going to be a tough one for the Habs tonight, I think. The next game, 5:30, we have, what's probably going to have a heavyweight tilt at some point in it. The Washington Capitals hosting the New York Rangers. It's Reeves versus Wilson, something we've been waiting for since the Rangers signed Ryan Reeves. There's going to be fireworks in this one, right, Logo?
I'd be stunned if there weren't fireworks in this one. I think Ryan Reeves is no dummy. I think he's well aware of what his job in New York is and what he's being paid for there, and it's to change the identity of the group as one that's going to stick up for themselves and isn't going to be picked on and isn't going to be bullied around by a Tom Wilson or anybody else. The curious thing that I'm really looking forward to in all of this is, what's Tom Wilson's motivation going into this? Is he going to be anxious to drop the gloves with Ryan Reeves the first time that the two of them are on the ice together? I don't know. I don't know that Tom Wilson needs to send any sort of message. We know how he plays on a nightly basis, and we know he got into the Rangers' head last year after that incident with Panarin and the scrum beside the net. So I'll be curious about that aspect of it all, Riley, because the Rangers are trying to send that message and trying to have that new attitude. We know what Tom Wilson is. We know how he plays and how he goes about his business. Does he feel any need to even engage in Ryan Reeves? I'm sure Reeves will be looking for him, but we'll be curious to see how Wilson plays it out on the other side, because he doesn't need to send the same message that the Rangers do.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a long season. They're in the same division. It's going to happen quite a bit, and I'm sure tensions are going to be high to start it. I'm assuming Wilson gives it to Reeves. And
yeah, I think he'll probably play with him a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he'll probably, you know, shake the gloves at him a couple times, maybe skate off. I'm sure there'll be words. Look, if it's an opening face-off thing, then sure, let's get it on. Let's have I'm down for a good old-fashioned fight in the NHL as much as anybody, but it wouldn't stun me to see, you know, Wilson play chicken with him a bit before finally obliging him. I think that there's going to be more to that than just simply saying, oh, well, you brought Ryan Reeves and we've had our battles before, so sure, I'm going to drop the gloves with you. I think there's more to that than meets the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. Three games on the 8 o'clock schedule, three more Canadian teams involved in those games. We have an all-Canadian matchup between Edmonton and Vancouver at 8 o'clock. Looks like it'll be Nuge with Hyman on the second line, and Draisaitl and McDavid will stay together. What are you looking for from this one? As the storylines on both sides, there are plenty.
There are plenty heading into this one. It's another all-Canadian matchup like you mentioned, and it's going to be interesting because these teams saw so much of each other last year. Is there going to be some spillover from last year? I expect the Oilers to try to be a very similar group to the one they were last year, a high-octane, high-powered offense that, you know, you're going to be lucky to keep up with on the best of nights, and we'll see what Vancouver can do with their new-looking blue line. How does Poolman and OEL adapt to being in their system and playing against probably the best offense in the league? I think the Canucks will be anxious, Riley, to set the precedent that they're a contender in this division, especially with a lot of teams pegging Edmonton to be one of those three teams out of the Pacific. I think Vancouver will want to send a message that they're right in that conversation and deserve to be thought of as a contender in that too. And for the Oilers, it's not dissimilar to the conversation that we had about the Maple Leafs. It's not that the regular season isn't important. You still need to have a good regular season to get to the playoffs, but the whole narrative and message from this Oilers team won't be determined until we're through the playoffs. So I'm not concerned as to what we'll get out of McDavid and Draisaitl from a night-to-night basis during the regular season. But I know that they'll be excited up in Edmonton to get the regular season going, to have fans back in the building. That's a pretty common message. And look, these guys have had some good rivalries over the years. They're Pacific Division foes, and it's going to be an important one when it's all said and done at the end of the season, how these games have played out.
Yeah, I mean, it's win or bust for this Oilers team up north of us. They've had Draisaitl, McDavid for a few years now. They've attempted to go out and get some help, adding Hyman to the mix, and they got some young guys like Puljujärvi and Yamamoto there. It's win now mode up in Edmonton this year.
It sure is. Anytime that you've got McDavid and Draisaitl on your team, the clock is ticking, and I think that there's an urgency and an understanding of that in Edmonton more than ever, maybe. Whether that leads to results, I don't know. I don't know how much better they are defensively this year with a Keith and CeCe pairing. I know the Zach Hyman pairing or pickup, excuse me, is going to be a key one for them, and I think does make them better as a forward group. Does that lead to the kind of success that they want to have with 97-29? Still to be determined. We have to see that later on in the year.
Yeah, for sure. And just the two other games, Winnipeg in Anaheim, the Jets also in that win now mode and primed maybe to do so this season with the revamped defense logo.
Yeah, we'll see what they do. I like their forward group quite a bit in Winnipeg. They're going to be a handful on the best of nights. And putting a D group out there that's as deep as those six are in front of Connor Hellebuck, they're a sneaky under-the-radar team. Maybe not for me and Pat when we had our predictions yesterday. We're both pretty high on them. But I don't think they're getting enough love in that division. I think that'll change pretty quickly into this season if they get off to a good start.
I couldn't agree more. I really like them in their division. And the final one, Colorado-Chicago. No Nate MacKinnon for the Avalanche. He is in COVID protocol. This Chicago team is an interesting one. They have Fleury there now. They have the Joneses. And that forward group is good as well. This could be a turnaround season for the Blackhawks.
Going to be interesting to see. They clearly want to take another run with this core group that includes Duncan, or doesn't include Duncan Keith anymore, includes Patrick Kane, and Jonathan Toews. Can Marc-Andre Fleury be the stability they need in net? They spent big money to get Seth Jones there and to lock him up long term. Is he the key to replacing Keith and Seabrook over the years there in Chicago? Still a lot to be determined, but I think that there's a chance that Chicago has moved back into that playoff contender status. We'll have to see what Jonathan Toews looked like after not playing last season, but I know Patrick Kane's still one of the most dynamic scorers in the league, and you can't help but think that Chicago wants to take another stab at this before the Kane and Toews era goes away, and that, I think, dictated a lot of what their offseason was.
Thank you, Logo. Get ready for the big show. You got a quick turnaround here, and we'll co-host with Pat Steinberg from 2 to 6. That will do it for Sportsnet today, as no MLB on the schedule tonight. We have three teams off to the next round. Atlanta picks up the 5-4 win yesterday to move on. Houston wins 10-1 over Chicago. They'll play the Red Sox in the ALCS. And we have Game 5 between the Dodgers and the Giants. Winner takes on the Braves in the NLCS. That game goes tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Up next, it's The Big Show with Pat and Logo. This has been Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.